Good morning. Again, greetings in the name of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. We will start with our Bible study overview of the Bible. And as you can see on the screen or on the wall, the study today is going to be on 1st and 2nd Samuel. And we will have the study the next week also, two books, so we will be having it this Sunday as well as next Lord's Day, we will be having it. Okay. And probably in your, I don't think we sent an email or anything, so. Okay, let me start with the study. I think we will finish well in time so that we can be ready for the worship. Now, 1st and 2nd Samuel, I think most of us are familiar with the books. But in the Hebrew Bible, these two books were one book. They were not two separate books, 1 and 2 Samuel. They were just one book in the Hebrew Old Testament. But by the time the Hebrew Bible was translated into Greek, that is the Septuagint, because of the volume, the translators decided to have it in two volumes, volume 1, Samuel 1 and Samuel 2. Otherwise, in the Greek original Bible, it was just one book. And the reason was the length of the book, which made them divide into two, and not because there was any difference in the subject material or the content. It is just one book divided into two for the sake of convenience. And not only the book of Samuel, the same thing happens with the book of Kings as well as the book of Chronicles. All these books are one book in the Greek and in the Hebrew Bible, but by the time they were translated, the translators made them into two books. Now, the book of Samuel is named after Samuel, the first major character in this book. We do not know who the author of the book of Samuel is. The author is anonymous, though according to the Jewish tradition, they thought Samuel could be the author. And because in the book of Samuel, also read about the death of Samuel, then they added, okay, along with Samuel, Nathan and Gad were the authors of the book of Samuel. That is what the Jewish tradition is. But to be honest, we do not really know who is the author behind the 1st and 2nd Samuel or the books of Samuel. And as theologians look at the book, they come to the conclusion that this book has been composed and edited in various stages. And in the book, it talks about Israel and Judah. But if you know the Bible history, the division of the kingdom into Israel and Judah happened after Solomon. So it looks like the final editing or the composition of the book happened after the kingdom was divided into two, that is into Israel and Judah, or the 10 tribes or the 2 tribes. After the separation happened, it looks like the book was finally edited and composed, and you see some indications there. This is what we know about the author and the date of the Bible. Now, you all know the stories, but I think it is better to again go through briefly what 1st and 2nd Samuel book is all about. Where does the book start? 1st and 2nd, 1st Samuel, where does it start? Don't look into the Bible. Yes. It starts with Hannah. There is a miraculous birth of Samuel in answer to the prayer of Hannah. That is how the book starts. And as a child, Samuel lives in the temple at Shiloh, or the shrine at Shiloh, which was under the control of Eli and his wicked sons. And God singled out Samuel as a prophet, And his first prophecy was one of judgment on the corrupt priests. Later on we see that Israelites go to war against the enemies, the Philistines. And Israelites are defeated. The sons of Eli are killed. And on hearing the news, Eli also dies. The Philistines capture the Ark of the Covenant and are in temporary possession of the Ark. But when the Lord sends judgment, the Philistines return the Ark. Samuel calls Israel to repentance and then to victory over the Philistines. Now the people of Israel, they want to be like the rest of the other nations and they desire a king. Samuel is displeased when he gets the demand from the people. But the Lord tells him that it is not Samuel's leadership that they are rejecting, but his own leadership. And after warning the people of having a king or what would be the consequence, finally we see that Samuel anoints Saul as the first king of Israel. And Saul starts good. He has initial success. But later on we find that he takes a lot of missteps and he presumptuously offers a sacrifice which he is not supposed to do. He disobeys the Lord's command. And finally, because of his rebellion, God removes his blessing from Saul and an evil spirit terrifies him. And Samuel anoints David as the next king. Later, David has his famous confrontation with Goliath, I think. David and Goliath's story, I don't think we will forget. And David serves in Saul's court. And Saul becomes jealous of David's popularity. And he attempts to kill David. David flees. And with supernatural aid, David narrowly escapes the bloodthirsty Saul. And through all of these things, David maintains his integrity and his friendship with Jonathan, that is the son of Saul. Near the end of the book, Samuel dies. Saul is a lost man. And on the eve of the battle with the Philistines, Saul is seeking an answer. And having rejected God, he finds no help from God. And he seeks the counsel from a medium. So all these things, looking to a medium and then later on the spirit of Samuel speaking to him, all these things we don't even see it in other books. Here we find all these things normally which we don't deal with. And finally at the end of the book we find that Saul is dead and his son Jonathan also dies. Though 1 Samuel comes to an end. And in 2 Samuel we again find that David, he becomes the king after hearing the news of the death of Saul. David starts well, like Saul. David wants even to build a temple for the Lord, but God doesn't want that to happen. And in the second book of Samuel, we hear about the Davidic covenant. Because even up at this point of time, the kingdom is under the Mosaic covenant, and there God gives the Davidic covenant that we see in the second book. And after that, we know the downfall. David goes after Bathsheba, commits adultery, then murder, and then finally Nathan the prophet confronts David, and David confesses, and God graciously forgives, but he has to suffer the consequence. Not only him, his family and his kingdom suffer the consequence. And then finally, in the end of the book of 2 Samuel, there are certain details of the book or the reign of David, and the second book also comes to an end. Now, what is the context of the book of Samuel? Normally, the context we will look at the previous book. But what is the book previous to Samuel? What is the book? I think Russell was dealing with that last week. Ruth. Ruth is a very glorious book. So, for the book of Samuel, if the context is the book of Ruth, then we have a very rosy picture. But if you look at the timeline, what you see is, in 1375 BC, these are all approximate dates, The period of the judges begins, and around 1100 BC, Samuel is born. But the events of Ruth happen during the book of Judges. If the period of Judges is so big, then in between that is the book of Ruth. So actually, the book of Ruth doesn't form the context for the book of Samuel. It is again that sorry book of Judges where we get all those gory details that forms the context for the book of Samuel. And Samuel would be a contemporary of Samson, maybe 40 or 50 years younger than Samson. So Samuel is the last judge of the nation Israel. Before then, Eli was a priest and a judge. So Samuel would have been the last judge, and Samuel would have also been a contemporary of Samson. So when we look at the book of Samuel, we can't go to the glorious book of Ruth to see what was happening. We will have to go to the end of the book of Judges to see how the situation in the book of Samuel is unfolding. Now, book of Judges, Ian dealt with that. And 200 years of extraordinary social upheaval was the period of the Judges. And that is the book where we see a man sacrificing his own daughter. You hear about idolatry and fraudulent religious system. You finally come to the end of, close to the end of the book of Judges. You hear about the brutal rape. I don't think there is any chapter in the Bible as difficult as that. That is a brutal rape which you see in the book of Judges. And finally, we also come to see there is a civil war which is happening between the tribes following that brutal rape. And occasionally in the book of Judges, you see God will raise a man and sometimes a woman also to lead the nation, Israelites, out of that social and political chaos. These were the judges after whom the book of Judges is named. But once the judge dies, the people will return again to their dysfunctional lifestyle. But the constant refrain which we hear in the book of Judges is, the people were doing what was right in their own eyes. In other words, there was no established or permanent political authority in the land. Anarchy reigned. There was a crisis of leadership in Israel. And what kind of leadership does Israel need? We must, of course, remember that Israel was different from the rest of the other nations in the world. Israel was God's chosen people. They had become a nation because of God's promise to their ancestor Abraham. The promise was that God himself would make them into a great nation, and that through them he would bring a blessing to the whole world. And as I mentioned earlier, God again and again raised up a judge according to the need of the moment. But could that unpredictable arrangement continue to be a permanent arrangement? That is the question we have. And also in the book of Judges we see, after Gideon's success against the Midianites, the Israelites want to make him their king. But what happens? Gideon rejects that. He says, the Lord alone is king. I cannot be your king. And after the death of Gideon, one of his sons, Abimelech, succeeds in becoming a king. But it's only for a very short period. So the whole thing which we see in the book of Judges is everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And before that, they say something. In those days, there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And all these things were occurring in the land when they were at a constant threat from the Philistines and the Ammonites. They were the enemies at the time. The Philistines and the Ammonites were the enemies of the children of Israel, and they did not have any king, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Twice you see that in the book of Judges. So Israel was lurching from one crisis to another crisis for nearly 200 years. And what kind of leadership would be required to give stability and security to Israel? And that is the question which is before us when the book of 1 Samuel begins. So Israel is going through this chaos for nearly 200 years. There is no king. Everyone was doing what was right in his own eyes. And that is how the book of Judges ends. And the book of 1 Samuel begins. Now, as I said, the book of 1 Samuel, it is one book. 1 and 2, 2 Samuel, they are one book. And if you look at the book of 1 Samuel, it highlights two major events. That is the purpose of the book of Samuel. It highlights two major things. One is the establishment of the monarchy in Israel. That is the first major thing, the event in the book of 1 Samuel. And the second major event is the preparation of David to sit on the throne after Saul. Simply putting together, these are the two major things. One is establishment of a monarchy in Israel, and the second thing would be preparation of David to sit on the throne after Saul. Similarly, the major theme of 2 Samuel is to show that despite the weakness and the covenant curses that David's house brought on the nation, that king, that family, or that house of David remained Israel's hope. So that is the major thing we see in the book of 2 Samuel. That is, despite the weaknesses and the covenant curses which David's house brought on that nation, that house or that family remained Israel's hope. That is the major theme we see in the book of 2 Samuel. Now, we will go to the next topic, and I think this is one of the most important chapters in the whole book of not only Samuel, but in the whole Old Testament. This is going to be one of the most important chapters we will be dealing with. Now, the book of 1 and 2 Samuel, and also 1 and 2 Kings, and also 1 and 2 Chronicles, tell us the story about God, people's request for a king, and what happened as a result of God giving them a king, or the tragic result of the people having a king. That is what we see in 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, and 1 and 2 Chronicles. Now, if you look at the book of Genesis, the Lord promised Abraham in Genesis 17 that kings would come after him. That is what God told Abraham. And then when you come to the end of Genesis chapter 49, Jacob, the grandson of Abraham, prophesied of the kingship of Judah with no suggestion that it would not be the will of God. There was no suggestion that it is not the will of God. First, Abraham, we see Lord promised Abraham that kings would come from him. And then finally, we see at the end of the book of Genesis, Jacob is prophesying about the kingship. And when you come to the book of Deuteronomy, we find that God has made a provision for a king. Let us turn to that passage in Deuteronomy chapter 17, verses 14 to 20. When you come to the land that the Lord your God is giving you, and you possess it and dwell in it, and then say, I will set a king over me like all the nations that are around me, you may indeed set a king over you, whom the Lord your God will choose. One from among your brothers you shall set as a king over you. You may not put a foreigner over you who is not your brother. Only he must not acquire many horses for himself or cause the people to return to Egypt in order to acquire many horses, since the Lord has said to you, you shall never return that way again, and he shall not acquire many wives for himself, lest his heart turn away, nor shall he acquire for himself excessive silver and gold. And when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, he shall write for himself in a book a copy of this law, approved by the Levitical priest, and it shall be with him, and he shall read it in it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God by keeping all the words of his law and these statutes and doing them, that his heart may not be lifted above his brothers, that he may not turn aside from the commandment, either to the right hand or to the left, so that he may continue long in his kingdom, he and his children in Israel. This is what we see in the book of Deuteronomy, and this is what God is telling the people of Israel through Moses. So the Israelites, they left Egypt, survived the wilderness, conquered Canaan, and maintained their independence from other nations for centuries, but they did not have any king. Though Moses had said what sort of king they can have. They can have a king, and he has given certain conditions. But here we see the Israelites, they have come into the promised land, and they have conquered Canaan, and they have maintained their independence from other nations and centuries of God, but still they are without a king. But now when you come to chapter 8 of 1 Samuel, you find something different. That is where I said it is one of the most important chapters in the Old Testament, because this chapter marks a transition from judgeship to kingship. So in 1 Samuel 8 is a chapter where you see there is a transition from judgeship to kingship, and that continues in Israel. So in chapter 8, what we see is the Israelites realized that Samuel has become old. And unfortunately, the two sons of Samuel were corrupt. They were not like their father Samuel. They were corrupt. So the Israelites, the children of Israel, they did not want to wait for God to raise another judge in the place of Samuel. But they come to Samuel and they say, can we have a king? That is what they want. They demand a king. They don't want to wait for another judge to be raised by God. Samuel is old, and they say, give us a king, or they want a king. And what did they think in mind? What did they have in mind? Did they think that once there is a king, that will bring stability to the nation and prosperity to the nation? Did the people consider that monarchy will be able to cope with the threat from the Philistines? As we saw in the book of Deuteronomy, the desire for a king itself was not inappropriate, though Samuel was not happy with it. Samuel showed his displeasure. But as we see in the book of Deuteronomy, the desire for a king was not something inappropriate. And Moses has already indicated a time will come when they will, when they can have a king subject to certain strictures. And from chapter 8, let us go to the previous chapters, chapter 7 of 1 Samuel. And in chapter 7 we read, the Philistines plan to attack Israelites at Mizpah. And the Israelites become afraid. The Israelites plead to Samuel and they are saying, cry out to God for help because the Philistines are about to attack us. Now what does Samuel do? Samuel offers a lamb to God and he cries out to God and God responds with a loud thunder. And the Philistines become confused and the Israelites overcome them. That is what we see in chapter 7. And this is a chapter where Samuel sets up Ebenezer, which we sing in the hymn, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. Maybe you remember the second verse, which begins like this. Here I raise my Ebenezer, hither by the help I have come. You would have sung that hymn many times, right? But did you wonder what the Ebenezer in that hymn is all about? In Hebrew, Ebenezer means helping stone or a stone of helping. And that comes from 1 Samuel chapter 7 verse 12. Where Samuel set up this stone in Mizpah to remind Israel that the Lord helped them at this location against the Philistines. That is what the stone, the Ebenezer, is a reminder. So Israel in her emergency and in her helplessness leaned on God in repentance. There was no mighty king. There was only a faithful intercessor in Samuel. As the Israelites did not have any weapon, and the only weapon they had was prayer. So what we see in chapter 7 is the pre-monarchical institution of judgeship was completely adequate for Israelites and even ideal for them as a covenant people. So what we see in chapter 7 is judgeship was adequate for Israelites because God was with them. But ironically, in the same place where the Ebenezer we see, in the same place in the next chapter we see Samuel is receiving a demand from the people for a king. The same location where the Ebenezer stone is, that is the same location the Israelites are saying, give us a king, just like the other nations. And Samuel is disappointed. Samuel turns to the Lord for wisdom and the Lord tells him, it is not you they have rejected, they have rejected me as their king. Then Samuel warns the people about the dangers of having a king like the nations around them. Yet the people persist in their plea and then the Lord tells Samuel, listen to them and give them a king. So their insistence upon having a new king, we read about in chapter 8, was denial of the fact that the God-given judge was adequate and it was a rejection of God who was their ruler over them. In other words, when they asked for a king, they were saying that we do not believe that the Lord would grant us victory in his own time, according to his own pleasure. We do not believe in that. That is what they were saying. Give us a king. They were willing to exchange the protection and the power of the Lord Almighty for the strength of the fighting men of Israel. They were saying, oh no, instead of having the God as our Almighty, we would like to have some fighting men.
We want to depend on this army to protect us from our enemies. So they were saying, we want to exchange God for these men. And that is why when the people raised the demand for a king, God told them that Samuel, they are not rejecting you. It is me they are rejecting. So the Lord tells Samuel, listen to all that the people are saying to you. It is not who they have rejected. They have rejected me as their king. As they have done from the day I brought them out of Egypt until this day, forsaking me and serving other gods, so they are doing to you. That is what God tells Samuel. This is happening. These people have been going through the same pattern, and now they are rejecting me and they are forsaking me and they have been serving other gods. That same pattern now happens when they say they want a king. Samuel, they are not rejecting you. They are rejecting me. This is a warning to us, right? Don't you think so? The people are asking Samuel for a king. And Samuel, after some time, gives them a king. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Is there something for us to learn from that? God is answering the prayers, isn't it? Don't you think it's a good thing? I think it may not be good. God may sometimes give us a request to our own peril. God granting us a request may not be a sign of His favor, but it may just show our stubbornness. So sometimes God's greatest kindness is not answering us or answering our prayers positively exactly as we desire. Let us turn to Psalm 106, see what it says. Psalm 106 and verse 15. He gave them what they asked, but sent a wasting disease among them. Let me read from verse 14. But they had a wanton craving in the wilderness and put God to the test in the desert. He gave them what they asked, but sent a wasting disease among them. So God answered the Israelites according to what they asked, and then it says, God sent a wasting disease among them. So sometimes the best thing for us is not God giving us what we ask for. That is the best answer. Sometimes we ask something from God, and finally we see God is not answering that according to our request or according to our schedule. And God's answer is different, and we get disappointed. But I think best thing to realize is God's answer is the best. Whichever way He wants, He answers, that is the best. We will have to say, let your will be done. But here we find that Israelites are demanding a king, and because of the demand, God is giving them a king. And as I said, asking for a king was perfectly rational. But yet God viewed that as a rejection of His kingship. Sometimes our proposals, our requests, they may appear completely reasonable. They may appear to be clearly logical. They may be also obviously plausible. But they may be utterly godless. Because our idolatry is so sophisticated and appears so reasonable, it can be very difficult to detect our idolatry. It is so sophisticated. We do not realize our idolatry, and we think our demand is right, our demand is rational, our demand is good. But only God knows what is good. And here we find that because of the demand, God said, they are rejecting me, and therefore have what you want. And that is how from judgeship, finally, there is a transition and they go into kingship. And since you know the book of Samuel and then what happens in Kings and then in Chronicles, you see there becomes the downward spiral. And this book, probably the book of Samuel, was written when the final composition may have been done, when the Israelites were in the Babylonian exile. So look at the people at the time of the Babylonian exile, and when they have to think of what is happening in the book of Samuel, the writer is writing it, they would have said, oh, only if we had God not answered our prayers. If only had God rejected our request for a king, we wouldn't have not ended up in this sorry mess. But that is what has happened there. Here the writer of Samuel is writing what happened nearly 200 years back, and there we can look at what was happening there. The people are asking for a king. They say, we want a king like the rest of the other nations, and God is giving them a king. So asking for a king was not sinful in itself, but what was the motive? That is where the crucial issue is. And that is what we see in the book of Samuel. And as I said, it is not only Samuel, then in Kings and Chronicles, we find what happens because God gave them their king. And that is why I said 1 Samuel chapter 8 is one of the most important chapters of the Old Testament, because that is where the transition happens. Now, before we conclude for the day, let me give you a brief idea about what the book of 2 Samuel, the 1 and 2 Samuel is all about. If you want to have an outline, I'm not going to, with this I'll just come to an, I'll bring it to an end. But if you want to look at the whole book of 1 and 2 Samuel, you can see the first seven chapters of the book of Samuel. Here we find Samuel, the leader God provided. He is the main character in the first seven chapters. Eli is only a villain, probably. Hannah, she is a great person, but if you look at the first seven chapters, it is all Samuel. He is the leader. God has provided them. And then when you come to chapter 8 to 15, here we find Saul coming into the picture. The people are asked for a king, and now Saul becomes the king of Israel, the first king. So chapter 8 to 15, here we find Saul being the leader the people asked for. But by the time you come to chapter 16, the downward spiral had started, and God is now raising a new leader according to his own heart. And who is that person? David. So from chapter 16 to 31, here we first suddenly come across David, who later on becomes the king in 2 Samuel. So that is the way you can look at the book of 1 Samuel. Now coming to 2 Samuel, here we find David, a man after God's own heart. Chapter 1 to 8, that is a man who is after God's own heart. But by the time you come to chapter 9 of 2 Samuel, here we find that David commits the sin of adultery and then murder. From chapter 9 to 20, this servant, the man who was after God's heart, now is a servant under God's rod. That is what we see from chapter 9 to 20. And finally, in the last four chapters, it is a sort of an appendix. And there you see the kingdom in God's hand, and there you find many things about what is happening in those last four chapters. So, looking at the book of Samuel, this is probably an outline if you want to look at. So, this is the first study of the book of Samuel. I have just given you a sort of an introduction and what you look at in the book of Samuel. In our next study, I will finish what I want to say about the book of 1 and 2 Samuel. And after that, I think we'll be going into the book of Kings.